I used to sort of be really scared of meeting kids, if that makes any sense. I remember asking like a three-year-old, do you know how steam engines work? Because I was trying to think, I was like, what do three-year-olds want to talk about? Like, and I sort of feel the same about dogs.
This week on Walking the Dog, I went for a stroll with the fabulously talented comedian, actor and writer, Izzy Sooty. Now, Izzy doesn't have a dog herself. In fact, she's actually not a big fan of dogs. So I was determined to see if my dog Raymond could win her over. Come on, everybody loves Raymond. Izzy took us to London's Crystal Palace Park, where we had the loveliest chat about her childhood in Matlock, how she knew she wanted to perform from a really early age, and why she just adores doing stand-up. We also chatted about her acting roles and everything from Peep Show to Man Down, and she told me the sweetest story about falling in love with her partner, the stand-up and radio broadcaster Ellis James. Izzy's also a brilliant writer. I just read her latest novel, Jane is Trying, which I totally loved. It's a really funny, beautifully written story about relationships, families, and just struggling to navigate life, really. So do order a copy now because you won't put it down. I had the best time with Izzy. She's got this incredibly kind and just good-natured energy, but she's also hilarious. And best of all, she ended up falling kind of in love with Raymond. I really hope you enjoy our chat. Remember to rate, review and subscribe. I'll stop talking now and hand over to the woman herself. Here's Izzy and Raymond.
Mind if I get a bottle of water?
Come on, let's get. I was going to get one. Let's go. Oh. What do you think so far?
Well, actually, I don't feel like he's a dog. I hope that doesn't sound... He's like a new creature. Like half dog, half upholstery, maybe?
He's very cat-like as well, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he is, yeah. But he's not... I sometimes find cats can be a bit arch. Yeah. And I don't feel like he's like that. I know it's early days, but...
You say that, he's arching his back, and we know what that means.
He's doing a poo. What a lovely little ray poo.
I'm really proud of his poos, actually.
Yeah, no, I'm sure I would be.
Let's go in this cafe, Izzy. Shall we get some... I'll get you some water. Oh, that's my phone. They're being got rid of instantly. Who are they? I'm just in the middle of recording a podcast in Crystal Palace. Can I call you back, please? Sorry, this is Jonathan Ross saying the world doesn't need any more podcasts.
Say hello from me.
When will you people stop? Okay. Is that enough? Okay, have you got all that? Thank you. I'll call you later.
Bye.
Let's grab a water.
Yes, mask.
Izzy, let me get it. Yeah, I'm glad you like him, Izzy.
Oh, I do. I mean, okay, I'm gonna redo my definition of him. A quarter dog, a quarter upholstery, and I mean like a valance, you know, that goes around the bed. A quarter baby, human baby, and a quarter cat.
Yes. I think I love that description of him. So you're quite scared of dogs, are you?
Yeah, and I was trying to think about... I was listening to John Bradley's brilliant episode, and he's scared of dogs, isn't he? And you... I thought he responded very well to Ray. And when I was listening to it, I was thinking, what is it that's made me scared of dogs? Because he had an incident with his grandma where there was a big dog, wasn't there, blocking their way. And I thought, did I have something like that? And it's possible that I did and I can't remember it. I think I feel a bit weird about the slobber thing. You know when people kiss their dogs
and
stuff?
Yes, I know. But Ray doesn't really do slobber.
No, I can see that.
Hello. Where should we go, Izzy?
I think we should go round this bit because it's quite a nice
okay.
walk. I sometimes run around.
Let's go here.
It's nice.
Come on, Raymond.
Ray, come on, Ray.
Can you give Izzy a smile?
Oh,
no, he's not
loves
performing.
You.
You know, I've raised him to be very codependent.
That's the way anything should be raised. Children, dogs, everything. You've got to get something back.
I'm going to introduce you formally. I'm really excited. I love this woman. And I'm so thrilled she agreed to do this. I'm with the very fabulous comic, actor, writer, musician, all round superhuman. Is he sooty or is he sooty? Now, I say it in a sort of Matlock accent.
No, I
like
the way.
Is he sooty?
Yeah, I
but I know it's spelt sooty, but I like to put an accent on it.
I know, I like that. I think it's a schwa. That's what the sound is in phonetics. It's called schwa. I think it's sooty. The problem with growing up in Matlock and it being sooty, which everyone said, is that I got a lot of sooty and sweet jokes, especially as they say, Izzy Wizzy, let's get busy on the sooty show. So it was like a double whammy.
You're ISY, aren't you? This is a thing which I like that you're ISY.
Well, thanks. To me, it was really logical because my name's Isabel. I just took off the O-bell and put on a Y. There was a short period where I wanted to be called IJ because my middle name's Jane. I think I've read a lot of American books like Sweet Valley Highland. I want to be called IJ.
It sounds like an international visa form. Yeah. It doesn't work, IJ. Izzy. So you went for Izzy. I like Izzy.
Yeah, and there was a period as well where it's spelled I-double-Z-I, and then I decided that was ridiculous. And so for me, it's logical, the spelling of it, because I haven't added a letter to my name that isn't there unless it's completely necessary, i.e. the Y. But I do get called Issy a lot, like Issy Miyake.
Well, do you want to set the scene for us? I've come to see you in Crystal Palace.
Yeah, we're in Crystal Palace Park, which is massive. And we're walking along it's like a dust track, isn't it? It's a white stone track. Around, it feels like there should be a pond to our left, but there isn't. It's just an expanse of grass. And we can see Crystal Palace Transmitter.
Oh, IJ, I spotted that.
Did you? Did you, ER? Yeah.
Imagine I just always call you that now.
I'd love it if only you called me IJ.
So, yeah, so we're in Crystal Palace, and talk me through, this is your manor, isn't
it? This is my manor, yeah, this is, like, a lot of people know this part. When you say you live in Crystal Palace, they're like, oh yeah, Crystal Palace, the dinosaurs, because there are these stone dinosaurs that are quite famous, which we could probably walk past if you want. And the really annoying thing about the dinosaurs is you can't really go near them, they're across water.
And it's for the best, though.
Yeah, probably.
This park, IJ, really appeals to him, look.
Well, the thing is, ER, he is leaping, isn't he, with joy.
Yeah.
Which is what my rabbit used to do. And there's actually a name for it when rabbits do it. I can't remember the name of it, but it's called calypsing or something like that, when all their feet leave the ground at the same time, and it means they're so full of joy. And my rabbit, Clover, used to do it, which is the only real pet I've ever had, Clover.
Well, I want to talk about your childhood pets, because we should establish you and your fiance.
Yeah.
You and your
forever.
Fiance.
Yeah.
Your forever fiance, Ellis.
Yeah.
You don't have any pets, do you?
We don't have any pets. We live in a split level maisonette, and I know it's called that because we're going to be putting it on the market soon. I used to call it a flat.
May I suggest duplex?
Can I say parquet flooring? Can I say it's got parquet flooring, but just covered with dirty carpet, and I'll never find out till we leave that there's no parquet flooring? So that's no reason, I guess, not to have like a goldfish or something, but we are going to move, or we are going to get a garden, and then we've promised my daughter that we'll get a rabbit or a cat.
Talk me through your pets. Did you have, you mentioned rabbits.
So I had Clover, that was my rabbit, and I remember that we got her from a family friend, and I was probably about 10. And this is quite disgusting, but I'm going to tell you the full story. I don't care anymore. Now I'm IJ. I just don't care about people knowing this truth. So basically, my dad, bless him, converted a chest of drawers into a rabbit hutch. So he took off the doors. It wasn't just a chest of drawers, it was a kind of Welsh dresser with drawers in the top and then cupboards at the bottom. He took off the cupboard fronts and put wire across. So it was a hutch, essentially, with drawers at the top and storage above the drawers. So we could put all her hay and her food and stuff in the storage bit, and then she lived in the hutch. And it was my duty to clean the hutch out, which I didn't ever do. So I was a real fair weather owner. And I used to love playing with her, and I used to put her on my chest and zip up my cardigan so that just her head was poking out. I bet Ray would like this. And I'd lie on the sofa on my back and she'd just go to sleep. And it was so lovely. And I still remember that sensation of like stroking her fur between her eyes and down her ears. And she used to fall asleep and her head just fitted perfectly in my palm. And it was so lovely, but I did not want to do any of the boring stuff. So I never cleaned out the hutch and I never fed her. Yeah. So Dad used to get home from work every day at exactly the same time. And he used to put his head round the door and say, he was Scottish. Has anybody fed that bun? And no, I used to go, no. And then he used to go and feed her, and she hated Dad for some reason. She used to try and bite his fingers so he would get her food out of these drawers that he'd lovingly converted. And he was so dutiful, but she didn't.
He got
like
nothing
him.
Back from that.
Nothing.
And so you had experience of pet ownership, but you didn't. You didn't. You weren't a dog or a cat family.
No, I don't think we were. And I think perhaps if Mum and Dad had bred rabbits as a child, actually in Scotland, and he had a little Scotty dog who he adored when he was younger, and there are loads of photos of it. It was a boy, maybe called Jock. He was white. And I think Dad probably would have liked to get a dog, but I don't know. Mum is not really a dog person, although my grandma, her mum, did have a big black Labrador called Judy. Mm. So when I was growing up, I did have contact with a dog, but for some reason, I have got this innate fear of them. And I can't really pin it down to one specific incident, but I think it might be, you know, that thing of like, before I had kids, I didn't know if I'd ever have kids, and then I met Ellis and thought, oh, we'll give it a go. I used to sort of be really scared of meeting kids, if that makes any sense, because I used to think they would just think I was a twat. And I used to sort of, and used to try and make small talk with them, because I'd be like, I remember asking like a three-year-old, do you know how steam engines work? Because I was trying to think, I was like, what do three-year-olds want to talk about? Like, and I sort of feel the same about dogs. I feel like, what do I do? I don't know. And I think maybe it's just literally not having spent any time with them. And it's like anything, isn't it? It's like if you said, would you like to try windsurfing? I'd go, oh, I haven't got the first clue about it. So
I know what you mean. There is something quite incredibly sort of upsetting.
Actually,
almost.
Let's go down here, yeah, and I'll show you the dinosaurs. What about being rejected by a child?
Yeah, or a dog.
No, absolutely.
If you meet a kid, and I've had that where they go, I don't like that lady. Yeah. Or something, which happens quite a lot. Or the dog.
It happens to me too a lot.
I think I haven't done anything. I'm innocent.
Yeah, exactly.
Woman.
Do you have this thing where sometimes, so when my kids were babies, people just touch them without asking you, and it's like, oh, okay. I don't really mind it that much, but especially sort of old ladies, be like, oh, hello. And you know, Betty's got red hair. Like, have you dyed her hair? And I'm like, no, she's 2 months old. Like, why would I? Do you, people like that guy just, stroke rate, do you have a feeling of being protective over him when people do that uninvited?
Yes, I do. I mean, it's, you know, I feel ridiculous comparing that to a kid, but it's a
no,
dog.
I think it's really similar.
I still think it's sometimes because he pulls a lot of focus socially.
Yeah,
it's like I'm going out with Justin Bieber and I've lost him in the crowd. It's like he's just been swallowed up into a sea of fangirls and I've lost
him. You're just another person queuing up to stroke him.
But that's why I'm really impressed you've come today, because a mutual friend of ours, lovely Amanda, had actually warned me and said, she's not 100% enthusiastic. I mean, like, she did it in such a nice way. That sort of, I don't want to offend you. She can be a little nervous around dogs. And I said, it's fine, I promise. But I get it, actually.
I think maybe it needs to be rephrased as I don't like big dogs. But see, I did this episode of Peep Show where my character was, and my heart sank when I read these stage directions. It was like worse than if they said she has to be naked. It said that I had to like basically be in the park with Mark, and a dog comes along, and Dobby has to like essentially like a sort of play wrestle with the dog and get as close to it as possible, roll around. And you see, the character of Dobby was actually quite different from me. And that is exactly the kind of thing that Dobby would do. But I was just kind of like, oh my God. So I went to talk to the producer and I was like, and it was the first time I'd had to voice this fear of dogs, because I'd been able to, I'd been avoiding them without really thinking about it, if that makes sense. I wasn't really aware that I had this fear of dogs until I read this script and was like, I feel like I can't do this. It is actually a problem. So I went to the producer and I said, look, this is the situation. And he was really lovely and said, look, the dog handler will bring three dogs. And to sort of make things more tense, there were some reporters there that day doing interviews with people, which they never normally were. So I felt like there were like more people on set than normal. And I was just like, okay, Izzy, come on, for God's sake. And I can be quite hard on myself sometimes. I was like, Jesus Christ, you know, you're in your 30s. There is no incident to pin this on, like there is with John Bradley, whose episode I listened to, and he talks about this moment with his grandma where there's this big dog blocking their way. And I was like, that is completely logical that you end up with this fear of dogs because of that. I haven't got an incident like that I can remember. And I was like, just grow up, just do it. So in the morning, they showed me these three dogs. The first one, so they showed me this first one. They did it one by one. You know, I didn't see them all at the same time. It would make quite a good game show, actually, wouldn't it? So they showed me the first one, and I looked at it, and it looked very sweet, but I was just like, it's too big. So I said, I'm sorry, I just don't feel capable of doing it. Can you show me the next one, which I thought would be smaller? And they were like, that's the smallest one. And if they'd done it the other way around, it would have been better, because I would have been like, oh, okay, no, that's really small compared to the first one. And it was such a sweet dog, and they were all so lovely and supportive. They were like, Izzy, you can definitely do this, it's absolutely fine. You know, the dog has been on camera before, you know, he's not gonna and I did manage to kind of roll around a bit. I couldn't kiss it. I couldn't go near its bum. I was like suddenly aware of like all the revolting aspects of dogs, like poo and saliva and stuff. It's really odd. And then I sort of managed to do a bit, and I don't think it was brilliant, but I did manage, under the pressure of basically a crew going, come on, you can do this. It's basically the size of a rat. But I did genuinely find it very hard, and I was shaking, and I felt really weird afterwards.
Oh,
and I know
there's a real phobia there,
yeah,
isn't there?
I think there is. It's odd. And no one made me do anything I didn't want to do. And if I'd said, actually, I'm sorry, you're gonna have to get a body double, just shoot her from behind, they would have absolutely done that. Like, they weren't going, you absolutely have to do this or you're not. But I said, no, I want to do it, because actually I thought that it would make me overcome my fear. You know, my sister's really scared of spiders, and she went on a course, I think at London Zoo.
So how do they work? It's with exposure, is it, therapy?
Yes, it's exposure therapy, essentially, I suppose. And she said that they build up to letting a spider crawl on their hands, basically. So I think they show them the spiders, and then they probably build up to bigger ones and stuff. And at the end, you're supposed to let the spider go onto your hand. Ice creams.
Do you know what an ice cream is, eh?
Yeah, all right.
Hang on, shall we?
Yeah, does Ray eat ice cream?
Oh, yeah, he'll have a lick. But I don't... He's quite restrained, really. Izzy, what would you like?
I think I'd like... Oh, my God. I think I'll just have a single cone. Oh, a waffle cone. It's 50p more. Is that all right?
That's right.
Thank you. I'll have a waffle cone, please. Thank
Hello,
you.
Hello there. Can I have one waffle cone? For my friend, and I would like just a regular 99. Would you like any toppings on that? Strawberry chocolate?
Oh, yeah, chocolate, please. Chocolate.
She would like chocolate.
Thank you.
There you go. I'm one of those people who I can't ever ignore an ice cream van. Bye bye.
No, I know.
Are you like that?
Yeah, I'm a bit like, you know, Prince Philip's advice to everyone was apparently, if you get the chance to go to the toilet, always go to the toilet. And I feel that way about ice cream vans.
mesmerised.
I know. Do you think it's because with royal engagements, maybe they had to go for long periods without going for a wee?
Oh, I love that advice.
Mm, me too.
Come on, Ray. So let's go back again. It's going well with Ray. We've got our ice creams. Beautiful sunny day here. I want to go back to IJ Junior in Matlock. You didn't grow up in Matlock, did you?
I moved there when I was six, so I sort of do consider it the place I grew up really. I was born in Hull and then moved to Cheshunt in Hertfordshire when I was two, then moved to Matlock when I was six. So I do really consider it my hometown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like now I got some insight into your childhood because I read your first book. We're going to talk about Jane is Trying, which I've just read, which, a spoiler alert, is absolutely brilliant. But the actual one was fully autobiographical? I guess the elements I felt were semi-autographical because some names have been, and situations
some names
have been
changed. Yeah, and I didn't really like having to do that because it was kind of about my 20s, wasn't it, and dating and stuff. Mm. And I had this quandary constantly where I'd put stuff in about guys and then be like, oh God, you know, I would worry, I don't know if you felt like this as well, that people I knew would read it. So I became frustrated actually with having to change things. I enjoyed writing it, but I felt it, I was really loved writing a novel next because I could put in real people, but just change their gender or a few physical aspects of them, and then they wouldn't recognise themselves, I hope. Although the mum in Jane is Trying, which is a novel, is quite similar to my mum, and I was really nervous when she read it. But luckily, she liked it. So, and she's always very honest, mum. She will just say if she thinks something isn't great that I've done, which is actually brilliant. As long as she likes, as long as she likes the things.
Oh, look at the birds, Izzy.
Oh, I wonder what they are. Are they moorhens? I went on this course once about how to identify bird calls. Did you go through a phase in your life?
Was that shortly after your sister's spider course?
Like between us, we're doing every single course in London on. Like, oh, he doesn't mind though, does he?
Come on, Ray. So your parents, your dad was a scientist.
My dad was a scientist, was a specialist in lead and lead recycling, and that was his area. So he used to be abroad a lot when I was growing up, in America and Romania and places. And my mum had been a nurse and then did lots of different jobs when we were little, but mainly she didn't work that much, really.
You had a sister?
Yeah.
You have a sister?
I have a sister who's 4 years younger than me, with the fear of spiders. A worse fear of spiders than me, and I've got a pretty bad fear of spiders.
And I get the sense that you didn't have one of those, I've got to get out of here, you people are dragging me down experiences as a kid. Like, you were pretty happy as a kid and had, I just get the sense there was a nice family vibe you had growing up.
Yeah, that's true. I did really want to get out though. I did want to get out of Matlock. Yeah. I hate to say, because I love it and now write about it all the time and want to move back there. But because I think as a teenager, wherever you are, you probably go, oh, this is boring. Mm. But also, I just wanted to get to London and do performing. That was all that mattered. So I felt like I wanted to get to at the very least a city and probably London. And I actually moved out when I was 17 into my best friend's house, which is only 10 minutes down the road.
And did you, as a kid, most people I speak to who've been successful in performing, There is that thing of feeling different, isn't there? And slightly other and not quite like they're part of
gang. Yes, I did feel like that really. And I went to youth theatre from a really young age and I always just used to feel really shy. And I, like when I was at home, I would think, I can do it. I can do this audition, I can. And then as soon as I got in a big group, I just wouldn't be able to do it. And I'd always be on the back row and stuff like that. So it took, I just don't think I was very confident. And I used to write all these songs, so that was like my escapism. And I couldn't imagine a single day going by without me playing the guitar back then. I wrote so many songs, and I'm so glad I had that. But I felt quite angsty, and yes, I did feel like a misfit, really. I had two really good friends who I'm still friends with, but I wasn't part of like a big group. You know, when you see those girls who are kind of, they seem so sorted, and they're probably not inside, are they? But I wasn't one of those. I was on the tennis courts with all the other weirdos, with, had Doc Martens that someone had, we'd got really, really stoned, and someone had got a pair of shears, garden shears, and cut the soles up from the bottom. So they'd cut the toes off, so my toes stuck out. But then also we cut the soles up, so they were completely uneven on the bottom. So when I walked, it was just like there was no level. Oh, no. Stuff like that. I mean,
did you have... I'm thinking maybe borderline goth, bit of goth stuff going
on. Yeah, I did. And I remember going, I went to a gig once. I wrote a lot of songs that were like, nothing is real and stuff like that. And
I love nothing is real.
Yeah, nothing is real.
How did it go? Can you sing me a bar of nothing is real?
Nothing is real, for the world cries out and still we all are dying. Nothing is real. Something, something. Oh, there was trying, dying, crying, something like still the world is trying, the world is trying.
I love that. It's got a bit of a Howard Jones early 80s vibe to it. But you know, Izzy, I think it's really interesting because I wasn't quite in the pretty team because I wasn't rich enough or tall enough or cool enough or pretty enough, but I tried. And it's one of the biggest regrets of my life that I spent too long sort of with my fingertips on the windowsill ledge, right, being constantly reminded of why I wasn't good enough.
Right.
And actually, there were some incredible friends I had in the weirdo set.
Yeah.
Which is where, frankly, my natural home was.
Yeah.
And I sort of, it's so interesting that you think, actually, looking back, I think those things that make you feel a bit strange can be channeled often, and certainly have in your case, into what makes you slightly stand out. And
I agree, but know? I think you have to go through that phase of hating them. Yeah. I don't see any way around it, and I think it's really easy for you to have that regret, but you probably couldn't have lived it in a different way.
Yeah.
Because if you'd been, instead of having your fingertips on the window, turning around to everyone in the room and going, hey, you're my guys, you would have found something else to rail against or something else to try and change. Because I think teenage years are the time that you are really tested. It's really grim. And it's easy to forget how... I used to try and change my personality. I used to think, I feel like if I... I felt like I never knew how to like communicate with popular girls. Like I'd, a mum said to me once, just say I like your... then whatever, anything. I like your ring, I like your skirt, I like your... I often used to do that. I like your hair. I like your top. I know.
But you know what? Imagine it's so sweet if I just came up to you and said, I like your shoes.
Yeah, well, I do that now. So I have a rule, and I did this the other day. If I'm walking along, and it's a dress now, if I see a woman or a man, I'd do it to a man too, anyone in a dress that I love, have to really love the dress, I will stop them and say, I love your dress. Because I think if you've put a dress on and you, I think it's a lovely thing. And I will always do it. And I did it in Cardiff Station about a week ago. I ran up to this woman in a silk dress and I said, I absolutely love your dress. I love the colours of it. And she was like, thank you. And she stopped in her tracks and Ellis was like, oh my God. And I said, no, I have this rule now. I will always do that.
She'll talk about that forever. You know, I love that, isn't she? It's very putting good energy out.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I like that man's outfit. It's very sort of...
Go and tell him then.
I know. He won't believe me.
No, it's...
He looks like it. He's sort of Italian football manager.
Yeah.
He's a bit surprised.
Because he's got a whole tracksuit on it that's matching, and that's actually really hard to pull off, isn't it? Don't you think? And it also, it could have cost a tenner and it could have cost a grand, and I just wouldn't know.
But I find stories like that sort of heartbreaking, but also oddly reassuring in a way, because you realise that, you know, I mean, you wanted to belong, didn't you? And that's sort of all everyone wants, is someone to say, I like you, essentially. And when you're a kid, there's no way of saying that, is there? There's no way of saying, you know, will you be my friend? Will you like me?
No, yeah, absolutely. And the same with relationships. Like, I remember I had my first boyfriend when I was 8 and he was 10. No, sorry, I was 10 and he was 8. And that was my first kiss. That was, we Frenchied behind the canteen. He was 8 and I was 10. I know. But the way I got him to kiss me was to go up to him and go, I love you, do you love me? Because I didn't understand. And I think it's the same with friends when you're young. It's like, please be my friend. It's like everything's... You want that assurance, don't you? That you're not alone, I suppose. Which is what we want later in life as well, through friends or family or lovers or whatever. But I think it's a lot simpler when you're younger.
Yeah.
Or pets.
And do you think, when you would go up to those girls and say, oh, I like your dress, or how did it go?
Sometimes it was fine, but sometimes they were a bit confused. And I remember going to ballet and saying to someone, I like your ring. And she was like, oh. You know, because it would just come out of the blue. It wasn't like a natural thing. I was just thinking, because Mum had told me that was the way to make friends. Yeah. And I also remember that, I remember this as well. When we moved from Cheshunt to Matlock, which was quite a long way, when I was 6, we moved in the summer holidays and I had no friends. And it was before the internet, obviously. And we put a sign in the window saying, 6-year-old girl needs children to play with. Please knock at the door. And no one knocked at all for the whole 6 weeks. And I used to look out of the window and just look at all these kids walking past, and
no one
knocked.
But was your sister, were you close to your sister?
Yeah, we're quite different. We get on really well. She's got a brilliant sense of humour. She works in the financial sector and is very different from me. But I think we've both got this love of order and thoroughness. And I quite like the satisfaction. I quite like stand-up and I quite like writing. And I like acting as well, for this reason, actually. In the way that you do a job and then it's done. Mm. And when you write a stand-up show, it's finished. And you can say, I did that and now it's done and I'm moving on. Certainly the same with the book, same with the show, really. But the reason I like stand-up and writing is because it's kind of very a solo thing. Go this way.
I think she's got
the same thing. I think she's good with numbers and she quite likes that thing of like, right, that goes there, and that's that sum and that's finished. And yeah.
So they're
both quite anal, is what I'm trying to say.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I actually had lunch with my accountant yesterday, who's really lovely, and my friend Polly. And he was saying that I am the most organised person, like, especially compared to Ellis, because he's got the same accountant. He basically delivers his receipts about once every 5 years in a sock, you know. I've got an Excel sheet with every single payslip, national insurance, equity pension, VAT, total paid, date, and my accountant was, yeah. I mean, he couldn't really say you are the most, because he's got some discretion, but I was like, am I the most organised client you've got? And he was sort of had a glint in his eye, like, I was saying, actually, I don't think I need to send you that Excel sheet. Like, so I think my sister and I both have got that. We take great pleasure from like ordering things, and wow, that's amazing.
This is Izzy's impressed by Ray's water bottle. I wonder if that's partly to do with, I always think people who have a parent who is sciencey or, do you know what I mean, mathsy,
yeah,
or that way inclined, that doesn't feel such an unnatural way to be, does it? I mean, it's absolutely
no.
brilliant way to be. I'm really jealous.
But I sometimes think I could lighten up a bit. By the way, when I say that I've had lunch with my accountant, I wear it makes me sound like Robbie Williams or something. I'm like, but it's literally that we were in the same area and we really love him and he's like an uncle to us. Yeah, no, I do know what you mean. Yeah, but sometimes I think, like even yesterday, I was like, I don't think I need to do this Excel sheet. Why? And I said to them, why can't I just let it go? Like, why can't I just... But I can't. I really actually love doing yeah. it. It's quite chaotic in a way,
yeah.
the arts industry, using it in its loosest term, isn't it? Like being freelance and stuff. And I sometimes wonder if it's a way of kind of exerting control over some element of it. And also things can, you can get offered things last minute, can't you? And you can kind of, whereas somehow it's going like, right, I'm going to make a cup of tea and I'm going to do my accounts. I quite, yeah, I quite like it.
Look, he's looking at you, is he?
Aww. It's like he's waiting for a story. Do you think he, like, how much, not, like, do you think he understands you and do you, like, if you read him a story, would he, like...
When you say if you... So, you were saying that was interesting, that you wanted to, you felt that need to sort of, you know, to go to the big city, essentially, and was that because I get the impression you always wanted to perform? You know, a lot of people are like, oh, it just happened, whereas you always felt this is what
yeah,
I want to
no,
do.
Yeah, no, it was the opposite. Like, it was absolutely always the focus. I can't ever remember wanting to do anything else, apart from I jumped off a bridge for a £1 bet when I was 13 into a river and broke my ankle. And I wanted to be a tennis champion for about 2 weeks after that because I lay on the sofa watching Wimbledon because of my ankle. And I only really wanted to be a tennis player because I wanted to make people laugh on the court between shots. Then I realised I couldn't play tennis and went back to the original plan. Like, that is the only time I've deviated from it.
Performing was your thing, Izzy, wasn't it?
I always. And writing. I used to write little sketches and the songs and stuff. But from a really, really young age, from whenever I can remember, it was just... I want to be a star. IJ is going to be a star.
And what did your parents think of this?
And they were very supportive, but they had to make sure that I worked hard at it. Like, I don't think they would have liked it if I'd not known what I wanted to do and then suddenly gone, I'm going to be an actress, but I haven't done any acting, but I fancy that at kind of 17. I went to youth theatre, I was in school plays. I really was addicted to it. And... I think they were quite worried that I wouldn't have an income. And I did a secretarial course. I took a year out because I didn't get into any drama schools. I was forced to take a year out. And I just stayed in Matlock and did plays and did a secretarial course, but just gave up after a couple of months. So I just wanted to do plays, amateur dramatic plays, local youth theatres, this thing at Derby Playhouse, like a community theatre thing. I would do absolutely anything I could do. I just wanted to perform and write songs and perform the songs. And so I think they could see that I was really serious. And I worked really hard at college. I was like, did extra tap lessons. I was always on time. I was so scared of getting kicked out of drama school because they used to kick people out if they were late. And and I was doing sort of 9 till 5:30 every day. And all my other mates at uni were kind of like, oh, I had 8 hours of lectures this week. And I'd be like, I've just done, you know, a full day and then extra rehearsal. I just loved it. I did love it. And I went to a really musical theatre drama school. I went to Guildford School of Acting and it's quite kind of tits and teeth. But I left without an agent, and I left, you know, some people in my year had got agents, and I didn't. I just applied the old Excel sheet regime to PCR, production and casting report, which I got every week.
My mum would get those.
Really?
Well, she'd get them and she'd read them out and she'd go, oh, what about this? And my sister was like, no, Mum, you're not Italian, you're not 25, you're not like she's put herself up for anything.
Can you play the harp? Yeah.
So you'd get the parts.
I'd get PCR and then I would just send out for anything that was remotely within my remit, and then I would also send out 50 CVs a week to agents. And then it was before the internet really was being used, so I used to send out paper CVs, and then every day these returned CVs and photos would plonk onto the welcome mat. And we had a wall in the kitchen because we were all actors with I don't think any of us had agents, all in our very early 20s. We had this wall in the kitchen with the best rejection letters. We used to pin them up and draw like horrible pictures on them and write horrible. It was brilliant. It was like really cathartic. But I was just like, absolutely always putting every single feeler out. It was like...
You're quite a grafter, aren't you?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because sometimes women get discouraged from saying they're ambitious, but I like to encourage women to embrace that side of themselves.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It feels like we have to apologise for it.
Did you ever feel that?
No. And like, believe me, I've felt like I've had to apologise for a lot in my life. That sounds really... What I mean is, like, any woman, I've kind of gone, I wish I was thinner. I wish I hadn't slept with that guy. I don't mean that I've gone round kind of going, I can do anything I want at all. And I suffer from imposter syndrome, like most comics do at times, and sort of go, I shouldn't be doing this gig, I'm not... But I have never, ever, ever wavered from what I want to do, and I have always worked really hard, and I've always said I work really, really hard. And I prepare really thoroughly as well.
Yeah.
I just can't... But I think, again, I could probably let a bit of that go. Maybe in a way it's me kind of trying to... cling on to some control, but I'd rather be like that than rock up to something and be like, oh, I haven't learned my lines,
I can see that in you, actually. It's a sort of slightly more forensic quality, which I like. A lot of people do it in secret, but they don't fess up to it.
Yeah, that's true. It's almost seen as like, it's cooler, isn't it, to be like, and same with exams. Like, were there those people at your school who were like, I haven't done any revision, I'm just gonna, and then you find out that they did absolutely loads.
Yeah, that was me.
Really? Yeah. You see, I believed them and didn't. I always maintain I would have got an A for A-level English language instead of a B if we hadn't spent all night on the phone to boys we'd met at Centre Parks from Wellington College who were called Ed and Marius, and we were like, stayed at my best mate's house the night before our English language A-level, and we were like, let's ring Ed and Marius. It was supposed to be revising. We just stayed on the phone to them all night and then did our A-levels. And my mum's always like, you would have got an A if it hadn't been for Ed and Marius.
Tell me, we need to talk about your fabulous book. But to bring us up to that point, I just want to know, with comedy, you started doing stand-up, didn't you? And that's, I always think people that do that are so ballsy.
Well, I graduated and did all the PCR stuff and then had been doing the songs. So when I was at college, I started to do, I suppose, comedy songs, which happened kind of by accident. I just did what I thought was a reasonably serious song, but in a French accent, and made everyone laugh. And that was such a brilliant feeling. That was the first time I'd made people laugh with a thing that I'd written. And but when I graduated, I didn't do stand-up for 2 years. I was just doing theatre and education and kind of fringe theatre and stuff, and lots of jobs like cleaning, working in call centres and stuff, bar jobs. And then I started going out with another stand-up, and then I saw loads and loads of stand-up suddenly. So I was going to gigs almost every night of the week and watching his set change and watching him read different rooms and stuff. And then at that point, I'd thought about performing a double act with my friend before then, and I think I probably would have gone down the character comedy route if I hadn't started going out with John. And because of going out with him and then suddenly being immersed in the world of stand-up, I was like, I'm gonna try stand-up. So before that, I was watching these character comedy nights that were amazing, but I'm quite pleased that I went the route that I did rather than doing a double act, because I think I am probably better on my own on stage. You know, I've been doing stand-up for 19 years, which I can't believe. And I started doing stand-up again. I sort of stopped in 2016 because I had a very young child who I didn't really want to be away from at night. Then had another kid in 2019. And now I'm just going, right, I wanted to start doing a few gigs again. And I've put down the guitar, and it's the first time I perform without the guitar since about 2004. And the other night I was like, I'm not going to take it. I'm just going to do new material without... And it was an absolute revelation. Me and Ellis had to practice how I'd hold the mic, because I don't ever hold the mic. I'm just behind it with the guitar. So
that's an element of it being a safety blanket in a way.
I was thinking this earlier, certainly physically. I feel like, because you've got the guitar in front of you, you can lean on it, you can kind of finger pick under stories, or you can... So... I think so. Maybe in a less straightforward way than kind of are the songs, but certainly physically. And perhaps, you know, like, if you end on a song, you know you're going to get a round of applause, even if it hasn't gone that well. And believe me, I've done plenty of gigs where, you know, like uni gigs especially, where I've died hard. But you still know that if you end on a song, people will automatically clap.
Yeah.
So there was something quite... I felt like I was on the edge of a cliff. I was like, I'm not going to do a song at the end. Oh, my God, oh, my God. And I'm going to do a gig tonight, and I'm not... I emailed him on the way here and said, I don't think I'm going to bring the guitar. But I just had this feeling of, if the room's big, I feel like a certain responsibility to... play a song, but it's a new material night, so I don't think I will. I'm going to try and do 20 minutes of new. So it never ends, that excitement. And I don't think you should lose that. I think you can tell stand-ups who've kind of lost that joy at discovering whether a joke works or not and why. And I imagine Frank is a bit like this, that he will dissect something, and if it doesn't quite work, he'll go, if I swap that word around, it'll work. And, you know, that is the joy of it. There's a mathematical element to it. And most stand-ups really adore that I think. But at the beginning, you just have to want to do it enough to endure those deaths. I think that's all. You just get addicted to it. And then the fact that you've died on stage becomes less relevant than what you can learn from having died.
Does it become easier since, as most people will know, you know, obviously your TV work has been really celebrated now, and when you played Dobby in Peep Show, was that about 2005? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, no, maybe a bit later, no, 2008.
Yeah, 2008. So when you played Dobby in Peep Show, obviously that kind of broke you in terms of being a name, I suppose, and getting recognised a lot. How does that affect your work now and your stand-up specifically? You know, do you think that it gives you an easier, not an easier time, but when you walk into a room, is it nice in a way that everyone's like, oh, it's
maybe.
It?
Like, I feel like now it doesn't really have that much effect. And I suppose it's because Peep Show feels like quite a long time ago. And I feel like now I'm used to the feeling that when I first was on Peep Show, I feel like it made it harder and easier at the same time. I started getting booked to do slots I wasn't quite ready for because of Peep Show. So I'd be closing gigs that I just wasn't really ready to close. I wasn't good enough. And that was a bit of an odd feeling. If you were on after and getting paid more than someone better than you, but who had less of a profile at that time, I just felt guilty and weird about it. But generally, I think I felt like, maybe early on I felt like I should address it, but then I just don't now. I'm like, God, I'm just me. I don't really think about it. What's weird is...
Do people come up to you, Izzy, a lot and still say, do you get called Dobby and things still?
Yeah, a bit, but I really like... They come up and, like, they might say, oh, I liked... Or, like, Man Down or something, or... If I ever get my radio show, I'm like, oh, my God, thank you. That means so much because I work so hard on it. But not as much as... I don't get people coming up saying Dobby as much as I did when it was on. It's quite nice sometimes, but especially as when I used to go out in East London, it was sometimes a bit like... It's if you're drunk and you feel like you can't relax because someone might be listening to what you're saying and stuff.
Yes, yeah. That's true.
I always remember that when my dad was dying, I came home on the train from Derby to London and... Oh, there's a rat. How does he feel about rats?
I don't really like rats.
Shall we move?
Can we move?
Oh, God, no. I mean,
I'm just
who
a bit
likes
frightened
rats?
Of them. Where is it?
It went, don't worry, it went under that. It went towards the pond.
We don't like rats, me and Ray.
No, well, I don't. Can I be in your not liking rats club, please? So my dad was very ill. My dad was dying. I was coming back to London. And I had like a really long conversation with my sister that contained lots of private stuff. And then, and this actually happened more than once at that time. I think my guard was really down. So it happened twice on the train back to London on separate occasions. And it happened in a cafe that I was talking to people about Dad. And then someone who'd been sitting there for a while and heard the whole conversation was like, are you Izzy? Oh, can I get a selfie? And then I was like, fuck God, I've just said stuff that I wouldn't even say to... Yeah. So that was the worst being recognised period, if you know what I mean. Because I'm quite bad at... You know, you meet like... So it's quite odd the level of... I don't want to say fame, but being known that I've got.
Being recognised, yeah.
Because it's not every day. And also sometimes people look at you and you can see that they've sort of clocked you, but they don't come up. But it's quite a nice level, and I feel really satisfied with this level, and I definitely wouldn't really want it to go much higher than this. Whereas I always think people like Madonna or like Beyonce or something, they must have to be so guarded all the time. If they were on a train, which they probably wouldn't be, they're probably in a private jet or something, but, you know, or even, you know, the Beckhams probably go first class on a train. You can't talk about anything. It's exhausting. It must be, I would just hate it.
Yeah.
You must have such a small circle of people you can trust. And I just would hate to live like that.
Well, I wanted to say, actually, I remember, Izzy, you sent me... I'd met you a few times. We met through Frank Skinner, who's a mutual friend of ours. And you sent me a really lovely message when my dad died, I think. And you just said, oh, I just heard and I understand. And if you want to talk. And I just thought it was so lovely. I thought, God, what a compassionate thing to do. And I really wanted to thank you for that.
Oh, thanks. Well, God, it's fine, and it still stands. It doesn't. My dad died on Boxing Day 2011, and I can't believe that's nearly 10 years ago. I don't think it really. I remember someone well-meaning saying to me about 3 months after Dad had died, "Do you still think about it every day, or are you able to get on with things?" And it was like, "Oh my God, that's like he's like in my blood. He's in my he's sort of with me all the time. The idea that I would have a day where it didn't cross my do you know what I mean?" But they hadn't been through it, and I think it still stands. I don't think it's a weird thing, isn't it? It changes as time goes on, perhaps. But then sometimes I feel like still as shocked as I did the day it happened.
It's a very beautiful.
Oh, thank you. He's good with kids, actually, because he's not really like a dog. Are you?
Do you want to say hello to that fluffy dog?
Should we put him on the ground and you can see him? This is Raymond.
Ah, hello, Raymond.
Hello, Raymond.
Can you put your hand up like that? See if he wants to say hello.
He's very gentle. Do you want to touch his fur? He's very soft.
He's stroking. Oh, he's sitting down.
Very well behaved.
Do you like him?
Yeah.
Yeah? You can take him or leave him, really. You know.
That's his standard.
It's all right.
How are you today?
You've had better right. dogs. Oh, it's nice to meet you. What's your name?
What's your name, darling?
Rufus.
Rufus, what a great name.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So you said bye-bye. Thank you for letting us say hello to Rufus.
Bye, Rufus.
Bye, Rufus.
Bye. Nice to meet you. Come on, Raymond. I want to talk about... Jane is trying, and it's so brilliant, Izzy, and I absolutely loved it. It's one of those books that you just race through it. It's so funny, and you're so gifted at character, and one of the reasons I loved it is because she's complicated, but not in the sort of traditional way that women are expected to be, if I'm honest, in a lot of literature, which is kind of like, oh, you're so kooky, or you're so... Whereas it's like, no, she's just a real person, and you haven't tried to airbrush her, you know?
Yeah, good. I really wanted that to be the case. I read two books about how to write a novel before I wrote the novel, and then thought, I've got to stop reading books about how to write novels and just write the bloody novel.
Yes, that can be a full-time job, God.
It's like I'd written one book that was sort of, in a sense, a bit like a novel, wasn't it? The actual one. It wasn't a novel, but it had a beginning, middle, and end. And I was like, I actually learned some really, really good stuff, especially from a book called Take Off Your Pants by Libby Hawker, which is an American book about how to write. And it's very, very basically explained. It's so good. And she just uses Pocahontas and things like that as illustrations. No bullshit. It was brilliant. And so But one of the main things that I picked up from these two books about how to write a novel was not to be scared of making the main character flawed. And I think that previously, whenever I'd written anything, including lots of pilot scripts and things, the main character was always kind of maybe a little bit kind of, what am I doing with my life? But essentially lovable and kind and all that. And I thought, right, I'm actually going to make her. She's probably going to be a bit annoying at times. And that was so liberating. And it felt like she was more real. Because actually, we are all quite complicated, aren't we? And I think in some ways, you know, she's got OCD.
Yeah.
She's got health anxiety. She's also pretty confident at her job, a bit arrogant about her copywriting.
There's a point at which she's incredibly stubborn as well, in terms of inflexible. About, I've made my mind up about something, and this is how it's. But it just felt like a real family I was reading about, you know, and her life felt real. And
when I wrote the book, I imagined going back to my old mum and dad's house when I was writing Jane's environment and stuff. So when I used to go back, I didn't feel like Jane does when she goes back. My mum and dad didn't mollycoddle me like I think they do. But the layout of the house is exactly the same. And it was really lovely to remember my parents' old house and how it was when I was writing it.
Your characters are real people and they're funny, you know. And I always think comics, people who've done this for a living, your 10,000 hours... They, in some ways, they've slightly got a head start on everyone else, frankly, because you command language, but also you understand the choices you make. I mean, you're going to make some choices.
I think doing Edinburgh really helps with that, because you're kind of faced with a blank canvas and you think, what should I do an Edinburgh show about? And then you have to make decisions quite quickly because of the deadline, hang it on something and just do it.
Well, I want everyone to buy your book because, honestly, it's... It's just brilliant. It's one of those books, like I say, that you just feel so immersed in it. And I felt really sad when it ended. I hope you write another one.
Oh, thanks.
I want to know what happens to her. Well, I think she'll be all right.
I feel like... Thank you. I've just read a book called A Bit of a Stretch by Chris Atkins, who... It's brilliant. It's about his time in Wandsworth Prison. He's a documentary maker who got imprisoned for... sort of fraud to do with acquiring money to make a documentary, and it's diaries of his time inside. And I love reading. I read all the time. I'm reading Liam Williams's book Homes and Experiences as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah, but I don't, I don't want to promote that.
Hey, but listen, sorry, my point was going to be then the other day I thought maybe, because I was reading the prison book, I thought maybe Jane should go to prison. Like, maybe it should be something really weird. Because mum, bless her, because she liked it. And as I say, I mean, when I was in The Sound of Music, mum was like, you were adequate. Like, she's always really honest.
What was that at school?
Yeah, when I was 16, that was Matlock Operatic Society. You were adequate.
We're going to let you go because you've got a gig tonight. But I need to ask you before we go about Ellis. Very briefly, you're so suited and you seem such a lovely couple. What is it, tell me about when you met him and why does it work?
We met at a gig in Barnstaple and he was late. He was comparing. He's he doesn't do stand-up as much now. He's a broadcaster. You know, on our son's birth certificate, he put his profession as a broadcaster, and then he walked around behind the guy's computer to check that he'd written broadcaster. I was like, what has happened to you? Anyway, he does a show on Five Live with John Robbins. And
brilliant.
He does lots of other bits and bobs, doesn't he?
He does a brilliant show.
And he does a podcast called The Socially Distant Sports Bar as well. When we met, we were doing a lot of stand-up, and we met at a gig. He was late, and he'd spilt Ribena all down himself in the car, was absolutely covered. I just thought, this guy is great. He had this cagoule covered in Ribena and he left it behind and I smelt it. I haven't thought about this since, and it smelt really strongly of his aftershave and I loved it. And then he came back. I think I might have sent him a message on Facebook saying I've got your cagoule, and he came back to get it. But then his relationship status on Facebook said in a relationship. So I was like, okay, he's in a relationship, fine, you know, that's that.
Yeah.
But we kept Facebook messaging each other, just sort of nothing, you know, just sort of, hi, how's it going? Oh, he did a gig near Matlock, blah, blah, blah. And then I did a gig in Cardiff, and he lives in Cardiff, and then we sort of got together, but then there was a thing of like, he lives in Cardiff, I live in London. It was very innocent, it was very lovely. We spent a lot of time on the phone to each other, and it felt like we were like teenagers. We just couldn't stop talking on the phone. And then he moved to London quite quickly, I guess. But he went to Australia as soon as we met, for 3 months.
That would have made me very sick.
Yeah, it was grim. So I went, weirdly, I don't really like gigging abroad, but I went for 2 weeks to do Sydney Arts Festival first. Then we were back for something like 9 days, and then he went for 3.5 months to Melbourne, and then a tour of the Outback doing stand-up. And we used to Skype each other every day, and I felt like lovesick. I felt like sick all the time because I wasn't with him. I felt like, yeah. And I almost can't listen to music that I used to listen to a song by Dizzy Rascal, which I still love, but it reminds me so much of Missing Ellis that it's almost too much to bear to listen to it. So yeah, and that was in 2010.
You don't seem like arguers.
No, but I think I think lockdowns, like, I definitely didn't. I think I'm an extrovert, although I like a bit of time on my own. I can't be with people all the time, but I don't need much time on my own. It's just like a little top up of self,
yeah,
kind of. But he doesn't really need people, to be honest.
Does he not?
No. So when we were locked down, that was, you know, at times I think it was hard because I wanted to chat, and then I also got bored of him because I would have got bored of anyone who I was living with because it's just one person. I think I need to see lots of different people, and he just literally needed a book and didn't really need me.
What would he say about you, Izzy? I'm interested. If someone said, "Oh, what's the thing with Izzy?"
I think he'd say that I chat too much at night, because I think he's always winding down at night, and that's like my time to get going. So I often try and start like quite deep chats at like 11:30 p.m. And he's like, no more chatting. He actually says, no more chatting. And then he just won't reply. I think he'd say that I'm kind. I think he'd say that I'm a bit of a worrier. Like, I think as I've got older, I think it's also being a parent to 2 young children and all the logistics that comes with, as well as the emotional stuff. I think that has perhaps made me a bit more quick to snap. We still have a lot of fun. Like, I try and have a lot of fun as a family, because I think that I really can't remember doing things like all singing songs together when I was a kid. So I try and sort of have as much fun as possible, all 4 of us.
Do you see yourself in your kids a lot?
Yeah, so my son is only 2, so it's hard to tell at this stage, I suppose. But Betty is 6, and yeah, she's funny, and she is, I think, probably going to go into performing, but maybe not. I'm not certainly not going to push it, but and we look alike, which I think makes a difference.
Sort of, I won't let you down, Ray. We've got to let Izzy go soon. I often ask people on this before I let them go, before I liberate them. I'm interested in what makes people cry and sort of the last time they cried. So,
oh yeah,
when
okay.
When did you last cry? Was it when you were told that I was bringing a dog today? Because if so, it's all right.
No, it wasn't. Must have been a TV thing. I want to, because I cry quite easily.
A lot of people say they cry more easily since they've become parents, almost. Just,
yeah, that's true.
Sort of getting upset by news.
Oh, I know when it was. I went to a wedding last week, and
I told you not to go to your ex's wedding.
No, exactly. he didn't invite me. I still went. I wore a white dress. It was the only one in the wardrobe. I went to a wedding last week that was absolutely fantastic. Mm. The day before, I said to my daughter that the childminder was picking her up and taking her home, who she adores. but I think she just finds it a bit harder since lockdown to, she wants the routine of us being there in the evenings, and so she started hysterically crying and was like, please don't go, Mummy, please, I beg of you, please don't go, I don't mind you going out in the evening for work, but I feel really abandoned, why can't kids come, please don't go. I couldn't calm her down. It was, and then I cried then, because I just felt so guilty and so sad, and like I was letting her down.
But you know what? I think she will have seen that it upset you, and she doesn't understand about work and things, but I think that's so lovely that she has that kind of bond with you and misses
you.
Yeah,
I agree. Like, I think, and also I really don't go out that much. Like, I go, now I've started gigging again, I'm like, it's tricky, because I want to, because I really do love seeing people, regardless of COVID. Like, it would be like this anyway, but I think also I am a bit starved of it. It's weird, isn't it? Because you think, oh, we've been locked down for so long, I've got to make up for lost time. But really, I mean, how long does it take to make up for lost time? If you go out every night for 2 weeks, surely then you've made up for, I think, anyway, for me. But stuff like, I go around and watch Married at First Sight Australia at my friends, and throughout lockdown, we did it in her garden and dragged her TV to like the door of her summer house thing at the end of her garden, and drank cans of G&T and ate Maltesers in sleeping bags. And it was like so brilliant. Mm. And now I can go in her house and watch it. And we only do it about once a month, but it's stuff like that. I was also crying because I was thinking, I'm not going to be able to watch Married at First Sight anymore. Now I've started gigging again. I'm not. Oh, it's brilliant.
I get a good vibe about your family setup. I think it sounds lovely. And you know what? I'm so glad that we took Ray out today, because I know you're not a fan, but I feel it's been quite good.
Oh, I think it has been good. Do you know what I've learned? Are that all dogs are not the same. And maybe it's to do with me getting to know the dog and then making a decision. I don't have to love them if I don't feel like I don't, but I do love him.
Hey man, Lizzie loves you.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that, and do remember to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.